On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed and Odyssey podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
You know, I shared this story at the beginning of the show. I had a friend, actually one of my former bosses, who lives down in Kerrville, Texas, reach out, and he shared some amazing information. And he's going to join us. We actually did move him up. We had a bit of a cancellation. We said the 5 o'clock hour. He's going to join us after Sue's news at 5:31. But he sent me some pictures of what they call Texas Hill Country. And this area has, you know, 13 rivers, which are kind of amazing, and they're beautiful. And you know exactly why someone would want a vacation there or spend the weekend there. And yeah, it's really stunning. And, you know, he sent me some before and after pictures as well, which are just devastating, where you can continue to see those. The death toll is hovering, I'm going to say hovering around 90, because the numbers have fluctuated just a little bit. But we invited Dave Murray to come on here, our own meteorologist, to kind of paint the picture of what's happening down here. Dave, you've covered a lot of floods over the decades, a lot of flash floods, a lot of big river floods. And I don't know if you've ever seen anything like this.
This is pretty incredible. The 93 flood was incredible here in the St. Louis area and all around the Midwest. We've had prolonged rains in central Missouri that dropped 13, 14 inches of rain and created stuff. But nothing, the pictures that I've seen are just incredible. They just blow your mind. Just blow your mind.
Is there a meteorological way to describe what happened? Because some of this goes back to Tropical Storm Barry. And
yes,
that was early last week. A lot of rainfall.
Right.
We get a lot of rainfall from hurricanes and tropical storms here in the St. Louis area. You always report on that. But that's part of the component here, right?
Yeah, there's actually, it's almost, yeah, you always hear the phrase, oh, it was the perfect storm of things coming together. It was the moisture from Tropical Storm Barry that came up. There was also a surge of moisture that came in off the Pacific Ocean, a separate surge from the Gulf of Mexico, and everything was a slow motion pattern. There was the remains of a tropical storm along the East Coast, especially the Southeast, the Mid-Atlantic states, and there's this monster high pressure parked over much of the Western United States. So it kind of created a funnel effect of all this moisture coming together in central Texas. It is hill country, so you have a little bit of elevation change. But you know, I was watching the radar of this thing, and you could almost pick out a tiny, like, micro circulation of low pressure that just sat over the same area and kind of spinning around that low, these waves of thunderstorms that just really weren't moving. It was a bit of a training type situation, but there was a little more of a circulation than just training over like a west to east or, you know, south to north type pattern that you would typically see in a training type situation. This was a little more of a circulation that was kind of embedded in the overall slow motion pattern.
And is there a way to explain what happened or why that happened? So I quoted someone who's the city manager down there in Kerrville, and he said the rain event sat on top of that. And he was talking about how the river, the Guadalupe, has two forks that converge, and they come through the city of Kerrville. He says that the rain sat on top of that, dumped more rainfall than was forecasted. And this is really what caught my attention. When we got the report, it was 7 feet or so on the South Fork. And within a matter of minutes, it was up to 29 feet. And all of that converged at Guadalupe. I mean, that is a stunning number to go up within a matter of minutes.
Some of the other pictures that, and it was, you know, it was like a monster rise, especially if you just take like a 60-minute period. But some of the flash flooding video I've seen, is it looked like something out in the desert Southwest, where you get thunderstorms up in the mountains and the wall of water comes down through these dry gulches, and it looks like a giant wave coming at you. And that's what this stuff looked like, too. Now, it's a whole different kind of setup, but it was really one of those unusual things where it wasn't just rain and slowly building the river. It was these walls of water that were coming down, not only the main river, but also some of the smaller rivers that fed into the main rivers. And so from what I kind of have gathered is that in this particular part of Texas, it has happened before back in the 80s. Something very similar had happened. Yeah.
Dave, how does it come up that fast? Is it just the amount of rain and then the soil doesn't absorb it? Like, I feel we have clay here and it's not a big absorber. But for it to go up that much that fast really was freaky to even hear about. Like, I can't even process that.
I know.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, you could almost picture you dump 20, 30 inches of rain on a slab of concrete.
Right.
It has no place to go. And so it can only go one place, and that's either into the storm drains, or which also kind of release into the rivers for the most part, or it just finds its way through the big rivers and the small rivers, and the smaller rivers just keep feeding, you know, what's going on. You know, around St. Louis, it's our major river flooding. It's like you kind of look at the smaller rivers first. They're in flood, and then the Merrimack goes into flood, and then the Mississippi goes into flood. The Illinois goes into flood. It's kind of a sequence that happens. And this was just on a very much faster, you know, part of time. And it would be very hard for a meteorologist to forecast 20 inches of rain.
Yeah.
Can you know, I wouldn't hesitate to forecast a 5, 6, 7 inch rain event. And the other thing is that when the warnings really started to get out, which not necessarily late, but it was all happening so fast. The warnings came out like at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And it was people sleeping during a holiday weekend, people not paying attention. You kind of lose sight of what's going on. And then when you wake up, you're way behind the eight ball because the river's already doing its thing.
Hey, Dave, I heard that the rescue efforts might have even been slowed because they couldn't evacuate people in buses from the affected areas because they were afraid those buses would get washed off the road as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You almost had no place to go, and to get like boats, you know, rescue boats into the river, this thing's moving way too fast for that. I don't care what kind of engine you have on it. And there's, don't forget all the debris that's coming with it. It's really, you know, we've seen flooding, obviously major flooding in the St. Louis area. And when you look at it, it's the river's very turbulent and it's full of stuff. It's full of trees. It's full of garbage. It's full of oil cans. Ugh. It's full of all kinds of stuff. And that makes it even harder for the rescuers to actually put something in the water to try to get somebody.
So the friend of mine who I'm going to have on here after Sue's news has sent me some before and after pictures, and he sent me some of the debris. And he said, have you ever seen debris piled this high? And the only thing that came to mind for me was 1993. But, I mean, this picture, and I showed it to Sue, it has two workers involved, and it's got trees, and it really puts it into perspective. And I think the answer to the question is no. I have never seen debris that was piled that high, and that's what they're dealing with right now.
Yeah. Okay, you guys. I'm sorry, Dave. I have a really dumb question, and that is
not from you.
That is, where does the water go once it's gone up that high? Where does it disappear, and does it go back into rivers?
It spreads out. It's, you know, it is now, once it gets out of the channel of the river, it spreads out farmland, goes into residential areas, goes all over the place. Eventually, all that water finds its way to an ocean.
Yeah.
You know, it does eventually get there. But and almost as fast as it came up, it went down. But
that's
the problem
what freaks
is
me out.
They're still seeing rain. You know, it's still the setup is there. There's still a couple of inches of rain falling almost every day.
Dave, thanks for your help. I appreciate it.
You bet it.
All right, Sue's news.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up. Well, I watched a fair amount of baseball over the weekend. Fred, did you watch baseball?
Yeah, I did.
Saturday was great,
wasn't it? Saturday was great. That's right.
Friday and Sunday. Man, the Cubs are so good. Frank Cusimano is going to join us a little later. And here's what I would say. I've already seen enough. I've made the call. Ethan might disagree with me. I know we're technically in the wild card race, but in 3 weeks, I think we should be definitive sellers, not buyers. I mean, it is what it is. We have a lot of young talent. If we can still get to the wild card, I'm fine with that. You don't know what kind of magic might be in the bottle. But there's a big difference between the Cubs talent level in the Cardinals. That's what I would say.
It's tough because they are a little bit banged up right now, and I think they're missing.
That's a big component.
Herrera, and I think they're missing Arenado than people think. So that plays one part into it. But when you look at this season as a whole, Mark, it's really been broken into streaks. They've had a couple of really good streaks and a couple of really bad ones. And this past week was a really bad one. So eventually, right, you're going to have to make a decision. But this one surprised me. If the decision of if they're going to be, you know, really buying or doing or what they're doing at the deadline comes down to the final few days, because they have been playing so hot cold, it may just come down to what the week before the deadline looks like.
We don't know what's going to happen this week. We didn't think. I mean, I said it a week ago with Frank. You don't want to lose to the Pirates, but they get swept by the Pirates.
Yeah,
and
that wasn't
lose 2 or 3. But they're back home this week, and who knows what can happen.
They need that rest. They need that rest before this for the All-Star break.
Is that the last time we saw Eric Fetty as a starter? Michaelis?
It may be for one of them, yes.
Okay, let's do this.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Ethan's here, but there's no fish.
Wait.
What happened to my fish?
You know what happened? What happened was, is the bag that I brought, it got lost. It got lost in the airport.
Oh, is that what happened?
It's gone. Yep.
Oh, I see.
He went to Seattle.
Yes.
Sue specifically requested
a fish.
And there is a way to package the fish from the fish market where it wouldn't smell up the whole airplane,
yes,
right?
Yes, they do it quite a bit at Pike Market, and they just wrap it up for you and give it to you to go.
I got nervous. I texted him on Friday. I said, Sue is going to be so disappointed. And you wussed out, dude.
I got nervous. Yeah. I got nervous.
What made you nervous?
The thought of
everyone smelling a fish on an airplane.
But you can't smell it.
The thought of transporting seafood for, let's see, we left the airport at 2:15 in the morning.
Oh, gosh.
And we didn't get home until 8 o'clock at night.
And you had a real bad trip to get there, too, didn't you?
I don't think I told you guys this.
Listen to this.
So we were supposed to land. We had a flight from St. Louis to Vegas to Seattle.
Okay.
We were supposed to land a little bit after midnight last Tuesday.
Okay.
We didn't get to Vegas until around 10:30 a.m. on Wednesday.
Oh, my gosh.
Our flight from Vegas to Seattle, while we were in the air, already having been delayed a couple of hours, got canceled. So we had to kind of figure out where we're stuck in Vegas right now. How do we get there? So they put us on a flight to San Jose. We landed at like 3 in the morning. We slept on the floor of the San Jose airport for a few hours.
Hideous.
Our bags were on a different flight than the one we were on. So they got there a couple of hours later. But we ended up getting to Seattle finally. But it was the worst flying experience I've ever had.
You can say this with a smile on your face. I'm impressed.
So sorry.
I did something I don't normally do. I didn't bring a sweatshirt and my carry-on, so I was freezing.
Oh.
I smelled terrible. Oh. It had been over 24 hours since I had showered.
Oh.
It was awful.
Wow.
Well, terrible.
That is horrendous. You know what to top that off is flying with a fish back home. That's always a good plan.
That would have been 16 hours without it, so I think it was just too long.
Well, speaking of fish, it's National Koi Day. I'm not sure you're aware. National Rock and Roll Day, National Dive Bar Day, National Macaroni Day, National Strawberry Sunday Day, National Father-Daughter Take a Walk Day, and National Tell the Truth Day. So no more lying, Fred. I know that's your thing.
Fred's the one I would target for sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm overwhelmed. It's a lot.
It's a lot. Okay,
I would take a walk with my daughter, but she's got another 10-hour swim meet this afternoon.
Does she really?
It's impossible.
Well, you can picture it in your mind. 48 years ago today, on this day in history, you might as well hit the music. In 1977, Styx released their 7th album.
Oh, yeah. Wait, did you say 7th album at this point?
Yep.
Wow.
Called The Grand Illusion.
Yeah. Great song.
Okay, we heard this so much as a kid, or I did, that when it came on at the end, I would just turn it. I couldn't stand it. But I know that people like Styx. It's just me ODing on it as a Ute.
That's funny. So this was one of those songs.
Yes.
For me, that was like Uptown Funk and like Happy by Pharrell Williams. that's funny that this was one of those songs, because this is one of my favorite songs. I love this song.
Well, yeah, because you didn't hear it every 5 minutes.
One of the reasons that they took off, though, is that, and I don't remember all the details of this, but Lady was released earlier, I think 1973, 1974, and it wasn't going anywhere. It wasn't really becoming a hit.
Oh, I didn't realize
there was a
that.
Disc jockey, and I can't remember if it was Bob Sorano or one of the others. These are guys who inspired me to go into radio, but there was a disc jockey who decided, no, wait, this is going to be a hit. I'm going to play this on the radio, and it worked. So up until that point, you know, they didn't have a lot of success, but they broke out for Lady, and then the rest is history, I think you'd say at this point.
Oh, my
gosh.
They're
a very popular band in St. Louis.
Oh, my gosh,
because of Keishi,
exactly.
I would say, right?
Well, The Grand Illusion is the name of this album, and also on it is Fooling Yourself. Now, the intro on Fooling Yourself is so long that we went for Sail Away. But, yeah. Fred, do you remember that song?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Was it every 5 minutes?
Yeah. Oh,
it
yeah.
really was.
It was.
Okay.
I still
Sticks.
Have all the words memorized.
I love Sticks.
Yeah,
I love, you know, I wish that I saw the Paradise Theater tour here at the Checkerdome. So that was
people
whenever,
love them.
I like
just
Renegade.
Me.
That's yeah. another one I like.
Joey yeah. Chestnut, I'm sure you watched this, Mark. Did you watch the eating contest?
No, what's funny is I was... Oh, no. You know why? I was watching Wimbledon, and there were great matches on Friday at Wimbledon, and John McEnroe was actually referring to what Joey Chestnut was doing.
That's
so I kept
awesome.
Track of what he was doing by watching Wimbledon.
That's awesome.
True story.
Well, he reclaimed Joey Chestnut, the mustard belt, for the 17th time at Nathan's annual hot dog eating contest. Random thoughts, the Schnucks brand of spicy mustard is excellent.
Wow.
We served that at our house.
Come on.
I had Cousin Kathy in from Sedalia.
No taking.
And her kids, Fred.
I had a Nathan's hot dog at the Grizzlies game on Friday, the 4th of July.
Yes.
I had two Nathan's hot dogs yesterday in the airport in Vegas. And funny note also, I watched the hot dog eating contest on TV with a German.
Oh, that's
it
interesting.
It was their first time. They were here for the 4th for the first time. And, I mean, it was funny seeing someone not of this culture experiencing that.
What did they think?
Well, they were fascinated. They were recording the whole thing. They were like, this is unbelievable.
That's hilarious.
Now, did you know that they isolated the camera? Like, ESPN3 had an isolation camera just
what?
On Joey? Yeah, George Shea told us that last week.
Guys, we're watching greatness, and we don't even know it?
Well, Joey scarfed down a total of 70 and a half hot dogs, which is just mind-boggling, in 10 minutes. He did not beat his own personal record, which he set in 2021. And I happened to see part of that one. He did 76, which is just... But he said, quote, man, I wish I didn't need a couple more. I'm sorry, guys. My goal was 70 to 77. I really wanted a little bit more. I know it's going to get harder and harder to break records, but I'll figure it out. He's apologizing.
How many did he eat when we had him in? And he did in 1 minute. We had a 1 minute contest.
Oh, that's right. You and Jane ate like a bite.
We ate a half of a hot dog.
Yeah, I think he did 8 or 9.
Right.
Which is about
he was ridiculous.
At the beginning, he was averaging like 10 a minute.
Yeah.
10 a
and
minute.
And it slowed down to like the 8 range, I think. But he was averaging 10 a minute.
What
at
have the
first.
Following, like, what have the last 3 days been like for Joey Chestnut in certain parts of the house? I mean, I've always kind of wondered
war.
About that.
War, Mark.
Yes.
The second place winner, who, you know, did well last year when Joey wasn't there, only managed to eat 46 and a half. Okay, real question. Does he just open his throat and just shove it down? I mean, how do you do that?
He eats hot dogs two at a time,
okay.
And he doesn't put them with the bread. Then he punches
the
bun into water.
I've
and
seen
then
that.
He just slides it down his
but
gullet.
But he can't be chewing. How is this happening?
I don't know.
Somebody needs to study this for me.
The sports science. We need like a sports science
yes,
on this.
Yes, absolutely. All right, the latest Jurassic Park movie, Jurassic World Rebirth, killed it at the box office over the holiday weekend. It did better than they thought it would. It brought in an estimated 5-day domestic opening of $147.3 million and $171 million globally. So that's a total of $318.3 million.
Those are big numbers.
It was the second best launch for these movies. This, by the way, is the 7th in the series. And Paul Hall didn't like it, did he, Fred? He thought it was okay.
Right, just okay.
I don't know. Will you see it, Mark?
I'll wait till
yeah,
I see it
comes
at home.
Out.
I want to
I
see
go.
Superman,
you
though.
Will, yeah?
I do want to see Superman in the theaters. That opens this week.
Well,
James
that's
Gunn.
Fair.
So that's the one I want to see on the IMAX.
They had some
for sure.
promotion at the VP Fair fireworks
yeah,
for
right.
it. They had a drone lights
talked
and they
about
had
last
Superman
week.
Logo.
Yeah.
Cool.
I saw the video of it. It looked okay.
All right. Well, Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., you know, my RFK Jr., has secured commitments from many food companies. Fred found this story to remove synthetic dyes from their products by the end of 2027. But candy manufacturers, particularly Mars, who makes M&Ms, are resistant. And they say, here's the problem. We take out the natural colors, and then people don't like it. They don't like dull colored candy.
Right.
So what do you do? And they say, listen, it's also natural colors. They're not enough to meet demand, and that the reformulation could drive up prices. Here's the thing. If they're toxic, take them out. We can all adapt. We can eat candy that does not have that in there, but that's
look,
my opinion.
I get it from there. Look, I've told you this before. You know, like if you see a little brown color on a piece of steak, that's not a bad thing.
Right.
But there's dyes that are put in the steaks in the grocery stores to make it look bright red, and that way you're more likely
really?
To buy it. It's just like a marketing thing.
Keep the M&Ms colorful. We're getting healthy enough in other areas.
Okay.
We can be okay
I
with
totally
the M&Ms.
I totally disagree, but they just won't do it. And finally, in Sue's News, we have today's random fact. Okay, since we all had the flags out, I had to go and buy a new one. Mine stay out, and then they get a hole, and then I have to put them in the little mailbox that's not a mailbox.
Understandable.
Yeah. Almost all of the American flags at Disney World have the wrong number of stars. That way, Disney does not need to perform proper flag protocols and lower all of them
Wait,
every
that's
night.
So messed up.
That's how
that's
they
so
get around
up.
It.
That's
Just
bad.
When you thought you didn't have enough questions about Disney and their wokeness over there, something like, are
that?
You kidding me?
That's what
okay,
they say.
That's kind of revolting, but I don't like Disney World anyway, so it's consistent.
I'm Emma Greed, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, I told this story earlier on the show. I get a group text message yesterday. I'm always suspicious of those. I didn't know if it was real. Then I realized it was one of my former bosses and friend Don Lynch, who lives down in Kerrville, Texas. I had forgotten that he lived there, and he sent a group text out to a lot of family and friends saying, hey, we are okay. And we're going to hear his story from down in Kerrville. Some of this stuff is just so devastating. The death toll at this point hovers around the 90 mark. I heard Fox say 89. I've heard as high as 95. Look, I think what we do know is it's going to go up because, unfortunately, there are still people that are missing. Some of these stories of the kids are just harrowing and heroic. Some are just tragic and gut-wrenching. But Don Lynch, who I used to work for 40 years ago in Columbia, Missouri, is with us this afternoon from Kerrville. Don, how are you this afternoon?
I'm fine. We're just very sad, and it's just a overwhelming feeling.
I can't even imagine. So you just to set this up a little bit, you live in Kerrville, right? But you were not there when this happened.
I was out in West Texas when the flood hit. We came home the next day.
So what would you say about this area before I ask you some specific questions? What is Kerrville like? And then, you know, I don't even know. I tried to do this a little earlier on the show, but how do you explain what happened with the two rivers? Does it make sense to you? Because there is flooding that occurs in this area. That's not unusual, not to this degree, though. But is there a way to kind of put this into perspective with the landscape down there?
Yes, it's they call it Flash Flood Alley. It's probably the worst flash flood area in the United States, but there hasn't been a flood anywhere close to this since 1987. So unless you're 45 or 50 years old, you have no recollection of that. And all the previous flash floods in the last 25 years or so have been much more minor. And the area is rural. It's one of the most beautiful parts of Texas. And so it sits in a hilly area, similar to the Ozarks that mm-hmm. you're familiar with. It has many spring-fed rivers that are beautiful, and it attracts a lot of tourists from Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, and Austin, and other parts of Texas. And July 4th weekend is one of the busiest weekends of the whole year.
Right. Understandably so. What would you say about Camp Mystic? I have a 10-year-old daughter who's going down to Rolla here in a couple of weeks for a camp down there. And that was one of the first things that I thought of, because this is a legendary camp down there, right? And it's not just people that live in Kerrville in that area that go to Camp Mystic. It's from all over Texas, isn't it?
Yes, and there's 18 camps. They're all similar. They're all in the same area. And all the other camps were able to get their people out of harm's way. And I'm not exactly sure why Camp Mystic wasn't, but it was in the middle of the night. The cellular messages went out from the National Weather Service to everyone, but there are places that have poor cellular services there. There's also, it's the middle of the night, so maybe people turned their phones off.
Right.
I really can't say why, you know, what happened.
What have you heard from the folks? Are you back now at your home or not?
Yes, I'm back home.
So what are you seeing and what are you hearing? You sent me a couple of pictures. I mean, the level of devastation. You asked me a question. There was one debris pile that you sent, and you said, ever seen debris pile this high? And I think the answer is no. The only thing that would come to mind is what happened here in Missouri in 1993. But even with something like the Joplin tornado or something along those lines, I don't think we've seen something like what you're experiencing down there.
It is unprecedented. The crest of the river, it's kind of unknown because the gauges at Hunt and Kerrville both broke before the crest. So I don't think we really even know what the crest was, but the Hunt gauge broke after it broke the all-time record high from 1932. So it's just an unprecedented amount of water. And the floods occur very quickly in this area because of the terrain, and the water comes in an amazingly quick time frame, and also it's going very, very fast, and it spread out over areas that normally wouldn't even consider getting a flood. And so some of these people were just caught unprepared.
Well, and that's almost understandable from the standpoint that I think it's human nature. We had a devastating tornado here a couple of months ago in St. Louis. And in the weeks preceding that, I was sharing with my audience how important it was to watch. And I don't know if you've ever seen it, this documentary that's on Netflix about the Joplin tornado, Don. And what I said, my takeaway was, you'll never react to tornado sirens in the same way if you see this documentary. Unfortunately, that kind of came to life here in St. Louis, and we had a situation where the sirens didn't sound. Look, the devastation would have been the same, but we were very lucky because we did not have, you know, a high level of loss of life, unlike what you have in Texas. So to a certain extent, you know, you experience flash flooding in this area. People know that it flash floods, but they never think it's going to overwhelm an entire community. Like, I think I heard that this was like a 10-mile stretch that was devastated. Is that accurate?
It's about 30 miles, Mark.
30 miles.
Yes.
Unbelievable. But to my point, yes, about the preparation, is it something where people, you get the warnings, you think, okay, it's not that big of a deal because I'm not driving through this particular area or this stretch of the river?
I think it was a combination of apathy. There are interviews with people who said that we got the warnings.
Mm-hmm.
We get those all the time. We get those Amber Alerts. I just turned my phone off and went back to bed and then woke up later with water coming in their house, and they almost didn't make it out.
Yeah.
So there's that, and then there's just the fact that it was in the middle of the night, and a lot of people turned their phones off. There is no countywide siren system, but you can kind of see why. It's a huge county, mm-hmm, over twice the size of St. Louis County. It's rural. It would cost a fortune to put in sirens. But, you know, I'm hoping that we learn some lessons from this and some changes can be made. But I'm the first to tell you, I don't know what could have made it better.
What the answers are. What have you heard personally from that area about the rescue effort?
It's been an amazing, overwhelming response from the state. You know, the National Guard is here. There's fire and rescue teams from all over the state. They literally have almost too many people here to help. So we've got everything we need from the rescue or recovery efforts, and they got here quickly. It's been an overwhelming amount of support. Now they're only asking for people to make monetary donations.
Right.
They need no more volunteers. And so that part here is very positive, and we're very grateful for all the help.
Have you spoken with some of the folks who are your neighbors and what their experience was, the people who would have been there that night or that early morning?
Well, I want to point out that the vast majority of these people that are victimized were out-of-town people on vacation, but there were certainly people local. There are some people that live along the riverfront that didn't get out, but they probably were more aware of the possibilities than someone from Houston that probably didn't know anything about the history of flooding here. And so, no, my neighbors are all fine. And right now, I don't know of anybody that I personally know that was a casualty, mainly because so many people were from out of town.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, we do these things, and maybe this will paint a different picture, because when you say they were from out of town, are they just camping near the river and doing things like, you know, in Missouri, we do float trips, right? That's a big deal. Float trips are popular. I don't think they're popular all over the country, but these are just folks who went to a beautiful area of Texas to relax on the 4th of July weekend and camp out, right?
Yeah, and there's all kinds of kayaking, canoeing, and river tubing on the Guadalupe. So, yeah, a lot of them were doing that over the weekend. And, yes, they were camped right on the riverbank. There's many RV parks that were filled to capacity, besides all the summer camps that were full of kids.
Would you say that from your perspective, talking to some of your neighbors, because the national perspective now, there's a blame game going on already, and there's some partisanship that's going on with politics. I have a guest that's coming up here this afternoon that's going to address that. Is that something that you're even hearing that people are angry about, that people are dialed into, or are you just focusing on the task at hand?
The locals are not nearly as doing as much finger pointing as it is on a national basis, but we all have questions and we all have concerns. Yeah. But the more I read about it and understand it, there were efforts to fund a countywide emergency system, but the public voted it down. They weren't interested. It was going to cost too much money. And so, apathy by the general public is part of the problem, but you kind of understand it's been 38 years since anything close to this has happened. And so it's a cost versus risk, and we've learned our lesson this time.
Well, Don, thanks for reaching out. I know that a lot of people have touched base with you from all over the country. I'm glad that you guys are safe, and it's good to hear from you. We haven't spoken in a while. I think you were in town for a baseball game many years ago, but it's unfortunately bad circumstances to hear from you. But I hope all is well, and I hope that area survives this.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. Appreciate it.
That is my former boss, actually. Don Lynch is his name. He lives down there, and they're suffering. He's lucky to be in an area that was not directly affected. Bill King, who is from Houston, ran for mayor down there. He's been a guest on many occasions. He's really hot about some of the hyper-partisanship, and he has perspectives because he was also appointed by the governor of Texas to a commission in the aftermath of one of the hurricanes. He'll join us at 5:30. Well, every Monday, we skip Friday because of the holiday, but Monday and Friday afternoon at this time, we visit with Frank Cusimano from KSDK. Can we just talk about Saturday's game and skip the Friday and the Sunday game against the Cubs, Frank? Is that possible?
I doubt it, but Saturday was a lot of fun. And that Joel Pozo, Mark, I don't know if you know his story, but like during COVID, when the minor leagues were shut down, he lost like health insurance, and he had a son that was struggling with seizures. And they actually were technically homeless, living out of a car in a Walmart parking lot. So anytime that guy does something really cool, I'm really happy.
Well, he jacked a great home run to win that game on Saturday. But let's face it, you know, you saw some staggering differences in the quality of the Cubs and the Cardinals this weekend and some pitching that really got into trouble. So I don't know what the answers are here moving forward. Look, I get that we're in the wild card hunt, and you don't know if they're going to win five straight after losing, you know, what was it, five of the last seven. But I think that we're going to have to be realistic in the next coming weeks about being, you know, sellers instead of buyers.
Well, you're probably right, but we are 24 days from the deadline. And if you do have a chance to make the postseason, that's nice. But if you want to think big picture, I mean, I just interviewed Andy Van Slyke, and just look, Ryan Helsley is the guy that can yield you some really good players. And we've seen what some of these trade deadline deals do for clubs in terms of an infusion of talent. If you DFA'd Miles Michaelis and Eric Fetty, I don't think any team in Major League Baseball would pick them up. But if you traded Ryan Helsley, you get some value. If you traded Sonny Gray, you would get a lot of value. So they got a tough decision to make here in 24 days.
Yeah, and let's talk about Ethan. You indicated the injuries certainly are realistic. How bad is Arenado right now? What do we think about that?
Well, I don't think it's really bad. I think it's an impingement. It's an impingement on his right arm. So they figured, let's give him an extra day off. And we have two in Chicago, one today. He'll come back. I would not be surprised at all if he plays tomorrow.
In Herrera, I think the window was like 2 to 6 weeks. Do we have any narrower window on that right now, or that's still a question mark?
Well, I heard John Mozeliak say this the other day, that Herrera wants to play right now, but the MRI says you can't play right now. And when you have a valuable piece of baseball property like that, you just can't rush it. And that is, like, you know, I think Ethan's correct. You went to Chicago without your best offensive player, and Nolan Arenado has been a good player, only, you know, missed the last couple of games too.
The latest news from the Cardinals announcing that they are bringing J.J. Weatherholt from Double-A to Triple-A, so he'll be starting things off in Memphis here. I'm not sure if he'll be up tonight or if that'll start to – well, it's probably an off day here on Monday, but I guess so. He'll be up in Memphis tomorrow, so exciting to see the Cardinals' best prospect that they've had in a long time get one step closer to the majors.
Great point, Ethan. Here's the thing, Mark and Ethan, is that the biggest difference when you were watching that game, that series, besides the fact that we threw two starting pitchers that are not very good, is the fact that Chicago has all these dynamic offensive players. I mean, all these guys, some are really young, some are not, but they got their starting outfield had 52 home runs last night. Our starting outfield had 22 home runs last night. So here's the hope, that J.J. Weatherholt becomes a dynamic offensive player in the major leagues. He's slashing .300. His OPS is nearly .900. The guy hit like a monster in college. Problem is, he plays second base and shortstop.
And he's
a lefty. You know what I would have done at the beginning of the season? I would have given him an outfielder's glove and say, here, you learn to be a left fielder, learn to be a right fielder, because that's where our weaknesses are.
Speaking of weaknesses, we have the Nationals in town this week. They've gone through a little turmoil over the weekend, I think I saw.
Yeah, they got rid of Davey Martinez, the manager, and Mike Rizzo, the general manager. It's not shocking. The record's not good. But they're going to come in here with some talent, because they did what the Cardinals should do, is they traded Sosa and they picked up Juan Soto to the Padres, and they picked up this James Woods, who's like the best young offensive player in baseball. So they're not very good, but the last time I said the Cardinals' upcoming opponent was not very good, they went 0 for Pittsburgh and didn't score a run for three games.
The reason I said earlier, and I think I repeated this with you, is that, you know, I've kind of made my call, and certainly my call can be turned around, that I think that we need to kind of move in the direction of being, you know, sellers and just accept the faith that we're not as good, even though they're exceeding expectations, right, not as good as some of the other competition, is because the young core is so good. Now, the only regret that I would have for not going to the playoffs is Arenado, because you can just see the fire in his belly right now and how hard he's playing and some of the plays that he's making that maybe nobody but Manny Machado can make at third base. So you feel for him, but man, we were concerned about the pitching, and that's kind of coming home to roost.
Yeah, when you think about it, 40% of your starting pitching are, you know, two of the guys would be guys that no other teams would trot out there.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if Saturday, because that's Fetty's start day, it's also Michael McGreevy's start day, who did get rocked last night, I should say, is if McGreevy gets that start. Michaelis is scheduled to start on Thursday. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if McGreevy gets that start. Before we wrap here, I want to quickly ask you. I know we had a chance to talk last week a little bit about the Zach Bolduc trade for the Blues. They ended up making a couple of other additions. They get Pia Suter, the centerman. That seems like something that a lot of people are excited about. What did you take from the Blues overall, their free agent signings and a couple of those trades that they made?
Well, two things. One is Doug Armstrong really believes in the infusion of young talent that he's going to see in the next couple of years. Two is the guy's got guts. I mean, just, I think we chatted about this, but Zach Bolduc is 22 years old. He just scored 19 goals. Kelly Chase said he's got a shot that reminds him of Brett Hall. To give him up for a guy who's only played 9 games in the league in Mayhew is just gutsy and ballsy and giant kahunas, you know, but he's Doug Armstrong. So, as I said last week, in Doug we trust.
All right, Frank, hey, have a great week. Let's hope that on Friday we're talking about some fun stuff. I'm going to the game on Friday night against the Braves with a friend of mine from Cleveland, so I'm looking forward to getting back out to the ballpark, but have a great week.
Thanks, Frank.
Okay, guys, take care.
We have former Senator Talent coming up in the next hour. Also, Bill King. Bill King is a former businessman and lawyer. He ran for the mayor of Texas, or not the mayor of Texas, mayor of Houston, but he's co-chair of a group called the Forward Party of Texas. I've had him on before, and he's also got some experience with managing situations in the aftermath of flooding and hurricanes. He's going to join us at 5:30.
Get more at 971talk.com.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed and Odyssey Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.